This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It's been 30 years since the unveiling of the Cincinnati Gateway at Bicentennial Commons. This massive project was part of a celebration of the Queen City's 200th birthday. But four flying pigs atop the entrance gripped the city in controversy. As a new exhibit opens celebrating the gateway, we look back on its history. And joining me now to talk about this moment from Cincinnati history is the artist commissioned to do this sculpture, Andrew Lester. Welcome, Andrew.
Welcome. Thank you.
We also have historian Dan Hurley of Applied History Associates. He's been on this program a time or two. Welcome back, Dan.
Good to be back, Michael.
And Rick Grywe of Grywe Development. He was the chairman of the Cincinnati Bicentennial Commission. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Michael.
Okay, so I was talking to you guys a bit offline about how I was really unaware of how controversial this landmark is, because it's just always been there as far as I've known. I'm older than 30, certainly, but, you know, when you're a kid, when these things are going on, you're not paying a whole lot of attention.
Problem with children today.
It is a problem with children. We weren't paying a lot of attention. The Transformers were on, the Smurfs. There's a lot of other things to pay attention to in the 1980s other than the news. But man, I've gone back and I've watched some video clips. I've read some stories and I thought, man, this would have been fun to be an adult and a journalist in that period to cover this story. So let's just go back. Let's go way back, because there's a reason that this site is what it is, period. It's along the Ohio River, Bicentennial Commons, but I think it's best that we start with Dan before we dive into this great controversial history with our artist friend Andrew. But Bicentennial Commons sits at a spot, Dan, where Cincinnati settlers first arrived. What is it about that geography that made this such a significant place in the very early days of Cincinnati?
Cincinnati sits at the midpoint of the Ohio River, and we developed into a great city because of the sort of unique geography that, yes, right along the riverfront, floods would affect us, but because of the basin, especially that hill between 3rd and 4th Street, the most important hill in Cincinnati that nobody pays attention to, that's a natural flood wall. So the city was able to grow through the basin, but that riverfront over two centuries had really declined into just being used for anything. And the particular site, as Rick can tell you, was not being used to its highest and best use. And one of the commitments of the Bicentennial Commission was that there be something that was lasting that comes out of not just events, not just programs from the Bicentennial process in that year of 1988, but that there would be something that would change the city. And this was a way to jumpstart the transformation of the city. And that was a real commitment that Rick and the commission led.
So Rick, as Dan was saying, like by the 1970s, this site, which had been home to so much industry.
It was a scrapyard.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was then Charles Sawyer provided some funds to purchase the site. And then the Bicentennial Commission was formed to have a permanent legacy. We raised $16 million to build Bicentennial Commons at Sawyer Point.
So 1788 is noted as the founding year of Cincinnati. We're at 1988, or just ahead of 1988, so that you can plan for this. And this commission is formed. That's not an easy task, planning for a bicentennial celebration. What was the goal at the early stages of creating this commission?
Well, we had the luxury of having 5 years to prepare, and we had a deadline, which Cincinnatians need. And we actually did $60 million worth of stuff. We were the ones that led the tax levy to restore the Union Terminal into a museum center. We took the lead on that. We did the river walk between the three cities. We did Bicentennial Commons. We did Eggleston Esplanade, which connects downtown up into the CBD. And one of the major things we want to do is leave a piece of sculpture that would be the entrance to this great new park. And we had a national competition. It was conducted by the Contemporary Arts Center. And there was three finalists. And I will always remember the interview with Andrew. Tell us about it.
Andrew is here with us. And
he won the competition.
Ultimately won that competition. Why is Rick talking about the interview and says he can't forget it? What did you do?
Well, it was a real dog and pony show for me. I mean, we had built a scale model of our idea, and that was a big clay model, heavy, came in a big heavy crate. So that was undone, carted out, and then we had large drawings, plans of the idea. And most importantly, I had brought along all of my historical research that I'd read about history of the city and so forth.
How did you get wind of the competition?
Oh, I think it was a national announcement.
Yes.
Really, it just came across in one of the periodicals that I had. It was just pure accident.
But you knew this was going to be more than just, let's see what an artist can create out of his mind in general. This has to be very specific to a place.
That's why he won the competition. The other artists didn't feel that way.
Yeah. I mean, one of the practical issues was about the fact that there was an active railroad line right there. And so the gateway had to possibly straddle that railroad. So almost initially, I think we all of us, in a sense, felt that we had to design some ornamental bridge as well. And so that's how I started off, just on those practical level. How do you get people from a parking lot over a railway into a new park? And but that bridge became changed. It's still there, but it swiveled around. Now it sits longitudinally. So the bridge became the kind of centerpiece and the armature, if you will, for some of these historical details.
One of which, of course, is a pair of two pairs of flying pigs atop this entrance. Mm-hmm. When did that strike you? When did you think, oh, I've got it now?
You know, that happened. And one of the other things that which was really useful for me, I don't know if the other artists were that affected by it, but you gave us a book called The River, a big, thick book with essays about the history of the site. It was fascinating for me, and I went through that book and read it. You know, it was a chronology of the early Native American mound builders and the geology of the site, and then the first settlers coming in. And somewhere late into that became the prominence as a pork packing center. And I thought about introducing some kind of animal imagery, because they even had the early river boats before steam engines. They would have the side wheelers. They would have a large turning cage inside them where they would put blind horses.
Oh, my God!
So I had that image. I thought I had this vivid image of these blind horses all kind of cantering inside of the ship, silently going up and down the river, except for the clump of their hooves. So, and then, of course, the pigs. And what most importantly about that site is it straddles the old canal from the Miami Erie Canal, and it used to come down Eggleston Street and dump into the river. Well, there were 12 locks on that hill, which is very steep, and these had to be manually opened and closed, and it took forever for a canal boat to lock down through the river. So they stopped doing it. They just, when they came down Central Avenue, that was the terminus for the canal boats, and they would unload and take everything down to the river boats by horse and cart. What happened to that piece of canal was it became a kind of derelict waterway, and with the slaughterhouses in the vicinity of the top of that hill, all of the offal and waste and blood from the slaughterhouses was swept into that convenient sluice, and so it became like an open sewer and got the nickname the Red River because of all the blood in it. So I thought, well, if I'm going to touch on the history, pork history of Cincinnati, I'm going to pay tribute to all of these little piggies who've donated their lives to the prosperity. So they are. Therefore, they're singing the Hallelujah chorus.
Yeah,
they're like
angel
angels. They're pig angels.
Wow. I guess I never even realized that, but that makes perfect sense. Yeah. Okay. So, Rick, Andrew brings this idea before your commission, and what is your reaction?
Well, the competition was conducted by the Contemporary Arts Center, so they gave their recommendation.
So they picked a winner and then sent it over to
you. And we had a representative on the committee.
Okay,
but then the larger commission saw this thing and fell in love with it because we were put in business to honor the history of our city. And this is the only artist who spent all this time really drilling down on who we are and what makes us unique. And we went ahead and hired Andrew, had a contract with someone to build it. We were underway. The Recreation Commission gave us a permit. We were under construction, and all of a sudden we get a call from one of the council members.
Yes, so you liked it. The committee liked it. You're moving forward on this very ambitious project and this really cool piece of sculpture. And then something happens. And that was the first indication that somebody didn't like it, was that a city council member called?
Yes, because he had a few constituents call him and say, hey, these guys are making fun of our heritage. So why would the Bicentennial Commission make fun of our heritage and call this place Porkopolis?
Was this covered in the press then prior to?
Oh, yes.
Well, I understand. We're going to talk about the press coverage of the controversy.
Well, Andrew has a flair for introducing his sculpture to a community, too, and he had fun doing that.
Okay, yeah. So when you have the release of this sculpture is coming, that's in the paper somewhere. Yes. It's on the TV station. So that's how these constituents contacted. Who was the city council person?
Steve Chabot,
now a member of Congress. So interesting that we're all still around. Okay, so this starts. And what was it that they were upset about? Just that they were calling it Porkopolis? And they were also upset with some of the words?
Mainly the flying pigs, that we would somehow make fun of our city on our bicentennial instead of honoring it. And they didn't like that one element.
And one of many, by the way.
There's 17 stories in that sculpture.
Andrew, you were quoted at the time as saying that the pigs look like little fat businessmen, which is appropriate for Cincinnati.
I forgot that one. You did stir up the pot a little bit.
That probably didn't help the public relations cause any, because then Mayor Charlie Lucan at the time called you irresponsible, and he really didn't like what you were doing. So when you were starting to get that reaction from the local politicians and this coverage in the media, I mean, how were you feeling about it then? How were you feeling about Cincinnati in general at that point?
I had Borgert, the cartoonist for the Z-Inquirer.
Yeah.
Yes. And I felt he was my one ally.
Jim Borgman.
Yes, Borgman. So he started using the flying pig as this kind of political symbol or a nemesis, bugging all these, because it was a presidential campaign at that year as well. So the flying pig became this albatross of ill fortune, which was always sweet. Somewhere in one of his cartoons, there would be the little flying pig. I enjoyed that. I had one friend.
And you are listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Today we are revisiting Bicentennial Commons and its Gateway Project, the sculpture that you probably are most familiar with as having those four winged pigs atop it. We're joined today by artist Andrew Lester, who created that sculpture, Rick Grywey of Grywey Development, who chaired the Cincinnati Bicentennial Commission at the time, and we also have historian Dan Hurley of Applied History Associates. So I watched part of this video that was put together by media artist James E. Rosenberger. It was called Flying Pigs, Andrew Lester, and Porkopolis. And so it was really cool to see Nick Clooney as a news anchor, because he was, I guess, anchoring the news at the time in 1988.
Well, Channel 12 at the time.
And he opened a segment with this line: "Why won't people look at the rest of my sculpture?" That is the plea of Andrew Lester, better known as the man behind the flying pigs. Did you feel like there was just too much attention on these four pigs rather than the entirety of the design?
Yes. I mean, well, yes, absolutely, because this is a huge installation. I mean, the central part of it is these lock gates that become this great theatrical gateway into the park, and then the levee on either side. So, and it was putting that levee or mound there created this perfect screen from the mundane parking lots on one side, and then you go through this very powerful entry, and then the magic of the new park would be on the other side, and then the smokestacks, of course, were a reference to the stacks being the only visible part of the riverboats if you were standing on the levee side. So they were there. They were an important element, the smokestacks. And then, you know, I also looked at the cupolas that were on the pilot houses of the riverboats. And they would have weather vanes, often a horse, and they would turn. And so that was the idea. I said, well, I'll put a pig instead of a horse. That was the simple gesture there. And then when we got rid of the central pilot house, we put the four stacks in, then obviously the pig has to go somewhere. So it popped up on the four columns.
So then the controversy grows, and there's this raucous city council meeting that takes place. What exactly was city council considering at that time? Was there some kind of vote related to...
Well, it was a public hearing. It gave the people that had a complaint with the Bicentennial Commission sculpture to come in and voice their concerns, and also gave us a forum for expressing ourselves. And it was wonderful because the businessmen behind this were the leaders of industry. I mean, I had some of the best Cincinnati and business leaders on my commission. So they were there testifying, which was great. Then you had these students from UC who were in the gallery waving their flying pigs on sticks because they didn't want expression of art to be mandated by city council. And then you had just citizens that showed up because it was such a spectacle. I mean, David Mann had a pig delivered from the Cincinnati Zoo that was oinking in the hallway of City Hall. You had Arne Bortz with a pig nose on and Peter Strauss with a hat with wings. I mean, it was a
circus.
Somebody
had a little piglet under their arm with a pink ribbon around it.
Yeah, Arne.
Arnold. Really?
Arnold, the name Arnold of the pig. Yeah. So it was just, it was just a circus. And so the four or five citizens.
A normal day at council.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun because we all left with a true feeling that this was the right thing to do for our city.
Yes.
After the sculpture was explained in its entirety, you know, the 17 stories. And we went forward and built the sculpture. And the day that was dedicated, I was standing there watching people's reaction to this sculpture. And one lady said, "Where's the pigs? Where's the pigs? Everybody's complaining." I said, "They're there." I said, "How come they're so small?"
So they wanted more pig. Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
In many ways, I think this meeting happened January the 12th of 1988. So the year was just being kicked off. And, of course, there had been the New Year's Eve event, but this was early in the year. In many ways, this was the best – a controversy like this was one of the best things that could have happened to the bicentennial process because it got everybody engaged. There was the pro and the anti-pig factions, but it really boiled down to whether or not we were capable as a community of having a little bit of humor. And laughing at ourselves sometimes, too. And I think that's what – it wasn't about partisan politics. It was just about, could we giggle a little bit here? I mean, you know, or are we just got to be so darn droll that, you know, we're boring.
And now the term Porkopolis, which is a historic note, is pretty well known commonly across the region. And you can't get enough of pigs around here. And so this – sculpture and the controversy surrounding it, that was sort of the moment that modern-day Cincinnatians embraced this.
Well, look at the press. I mean, all of the stores started full-page ads with, you know, flying pig T-shirts. Overnight, it was branded and made a lot of money for a lot of people. I would imagine there were flying pig brooches out of sterling silver. There were pewter mugs, little glass bells with flying pigs in them, and
Did you not copyright this, or did you own the rights to the flying pig?
I did not, no.
Well, one of the legacies, though—
It was given to the city.
Nice.
Bob Coughlin from Paycor came in about a year after the bicentennial was over. We were packing up, and he goes, "I'd like to start a marathon and name it the Flying Pig Marathon. Is there any reason why I couldn't?" I said, "No, you should embrace it. It's fine."
Mm-hmm. I was absolutely going to ask next. I mean, there would be no Flying Pig Marathon without
same
without
thing
this.
With you know, Tamara Harkavy's artworks. I mean, the big pig gig, that was fabulous. All the pigs throughout the city that we celebrated for a year there. So, and again, we've matured as a city. We embrace our history. We can have fun. And that's part of growing up, I think. That was the bicentennial legacy as well.
That's so fun. So now there's this exhibit at the Weston Art Gallery, which is located inside the Aronoff Center for the Arts, and it's celebrating the three decades of the sculpture, revisiting the Gateway Project. What are we going to see there in this exhibit?
Well, I've been asked very generously to provide documentation for not just the flying pigs, although the whole project will be shown in its entirety, and people will get an idea of the complexity of it with all the details, drawings, etc. It was an amazingly arduous task for a lot of people. You know, I mean, they did a great job. The degree of craftsmanship and technical issues that were overcome. I mean, like we have a little river along the top, and that little river could only tilt 1 inch or 2 inches. If there was any subsidence in the subsequent length, then it wouldn't have worked. And so that was you know, a great challenge to overcome.
So it's really going beyond the pigs at this exhibit.
Yes.
Oh, the pigs are just one of 17 references, historic references. And if you know the Smale Park now, where kids play in the artificial river and open and close the gates of the various dams, that's really premiered or it's referenced in the sculpture back in 1988. And because all the dams are marked at the same time up there. So this is the beginning. Not that Yeatman's Cove didn't already exist, but this is the beginning of a new understanding of what our riverfront could be. And you know, Sawyer Point totally, but the entrance sculpture, and then later gets expanded into Theodore Barry International Friendship Park, and now the Central Riverfront Park. This sparks all of that. And the Riverwalk, which I love.
That connects all three cities with sculpture.
That's right. It's beautiful. It's amazing now. I've walked along it. What a surprise. Pleasant one.
One thing that was interesting to me as I was preparing for this is that we're talking about 1988, and that was a couple of years before the Robert Mapplethorpe exhibit. And that's when the city got a real art controversy. And I'm wondering what these two events together in your minds tell us about Cincinnati in that period.
In many ways, I think this one was resolved on a very positive note. I mean, as Rick was just saying, by the time the pigs flew in on June 1st, the naysayers were nowhere to be seen for all practical purposes.
I forgot about that story. We had Navy choppers.
Right.
Fly the pigs in to be installed at the dedication of the park. And you were there, Andrew. It was fabulous just because it was so dramatic.
So this one was resolved without – in fact, I think when Arne Bortz walked in with his pig nose and the others walked in with their pig hats, in a sense, this was over. And people were just feeling good. And that's what one of the things that strikes me, even though you can see in some of the criticisms that Steve Shabbat brought up and that – Milton Bortz brought up sort of hints of what we hear today, which was that the elite were making all of the decisions and not allowing these people to speak, and bureaucrats were doing things that they didn't have any ability to be called in by the public. Those were just hints, and that was all done. So when you move on to the next controversy, that's a whole different thing. I really don't see these two connected at all. And this just turned into a fun event and a great year. And, you know, back, you were talking about the branding thing. If Rick had gone out and hired a marketing firm to figure out branding, they probably never would have come up with this. This is one of those accidental branding things that has just lived on. And the critics early on were saying, well, this would mean that nobody would want to come to Cincinnati. Well, people pour into Cincinnati for the Flying Pig Marathon every year. It's just been turned on its head. So.
I can't believe that I never realized they were angel pigs. And frankly, I'm a little brokenhearted now about it. I feel so bad for the
pigs. Go down and look.
Not that I didn't have bacon for breakfast this morning. So I guess I don't feel that bad about it.
I did too.
It's a really great addition to the city and has been for three decades now. And you can revisit the Gateway Project at the Weston Art Gallery starting on June 28th. I want to thank our guests. Did you want to say something else?
One more pitch. We're going to use the exhibition to raise awareness for the sculpture because it has to be restored.
Oh, it's time to do more work on it. More pigs.
No, it's 30 years old, and there's been settling that's occurred, and it needs a major restoration. So the Board of Visitors of Bicentennial Commons, which was set up when the park was dedicated, is going to be in charge of raising the money to restore the sculpture. So you'll hear more about this in the future, but we hope that the community will respond to the call for action.
That was Rick Grywe of Grywe Development, and he was chairman of the Cincinnati Bicentennial Commission at the time. Dan Hurley, historian of Applied History Associates, and artist Andrew Lester, who was commissioned to do that sculpture and gave us the lasting legacy of the flying pig in Cincinnati.
Oink.
Andrew, Dan, and Rick, thanks so much for coming in and talking about
this. Thank you.
The exhibit Cincinnati Gateway Revisited runs through August 25th at the Weston Art Gallery at the Aronoff Center. There's a gallery talk with the artist and noted historian Eric Doss on Sunday, June 30th at 2 o'clock at 21C Museum Hotel. Admission is free and open to the public. You can find more details at WVXU.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our program are online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.